Today's program was brought to you by Paradise Locker Meats. They exist to support and serve patrons and families in a sustainable manner by processing meats from small family farms, building awareness of local natural food, and providing quality, wholesome products with dedication, integrity, and honesty. For more information, visit ParadiseMeats.com.
You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us, and enjoy the show.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for listening. This is Sarah Kamen with HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You're listening to HRN Community Sessions. I'm in the studio today with a very special guest. He is an executive chef, James Beard winner. His name is Gerard Kraft, and he's here with us from St. Louis. But before I give you the whole spiel and tell you all about all the amazing things he's accomplished, I just want to quickly want to mention that May is our membership drive month. We are a member-supported radio station, so if you like listening to us and if you want to keep hearing more from us, we really, really ask that you consider contributing. Anything you have would be great. We really rely on you, and you can go to our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and click on the donate button. Your membership is tax deductible if you want to sign up for a membership. So keep listening, keep telling us that you love us, and we'd be very grateful for that. So, Chef Gerard, hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
I want to say that I have not won a James Beard Award yet, so if you are a Beard voter, please still vote for me.
Cutting right to the chase, Chef Gerard, I like it.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, so I guess he just let us know that he's a James Beard finalist. Very exciting. Yeah. Monday, that's happening, the James Beard Award. He is a finalist for Best Chef Midwest. In addition to that, he was named a Best New Chef by Food & Wine magazine and Star Entrepreneur by Inc. magazine. He's a 4-time James Beard nominee, and like we said, he is a finalist right now. And his restaurant, Niche, was awarded 4 stars by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch when it opened. And it was described as setting the bar for haute cuisine in St. Louis. So huge honor to have you in the studio today, Chef.
Well, it's a huge honor to be here. So thank you, actually.
Yeah, thank you. And I know that last night you were cooking at City Grit.
Which was awesome.
Cool.
Really cool.
And cooking with a fellow St. Louis chef, Kevin Nashen, who was in the studio Wednesday, actually.
Yep.
So 2 James Beard nominees, 1 dinner. It sounds like a weird YouTube video.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was really cool.
Yeah. So tell us about what you cooked.
So it was interesting to see the 2 perspectives in St. Louis kind of together. So it was a lot of fun in that regard. We started out with something that we start people off with in our tasting menu at the restaurant. It's just a nettle tea. And it's really the purest way, I think, to get the flavor of nettle. All these years I've been cooking nettles and doing it in pasta, stuff like that, and never really tasted the nettle until I made tea with it. And a local forager kind of taught us about it. So we served a nettle tea with...
Is nettle considered a weed or an herb?
I don't know. It's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, you know, herbs are weeds, too.
A weedy,
you know?
Herb.
Yeah. But... You know, you get a really pure flavor. It's got a little bit of rendered chicken fat in it. And we tell people to relax when they drink it. You know, sit back, sip it, relax. I mean, I know all you New Yorkers are so busy.
That's true.
And, you know, in such a rush. So we wanted everybody to kind of melt into their chairs a little bit.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think that's why New Yorkers are such foodies also. It's because, like, that time you eat is so sacred, like, especially when you're eating, you know, with such wonderful chefs and such beautiful food as you and Chef Nashen prepared. I think it's like our one chance. Like, we rush around all day, then it's like dinner.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
please
I think
take
for
care
everybody
of me
now. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So I know you guys alternated courses. Yep. How did you decide what you were going to prepare? Did you collaborate on any of the dishes?
We didn't really collaborate. So that's where, you know, it was interesting. We made sure we weren't using the same ingredients. Mm-hmm. And that was about as far as we went. Our next course was Brussels sprouts. And we served that on fresh ricotta and kind of a caraway crumble. Wow. With a little bit of Thai chili. And so the cups are facing up, the cups of Brussels sprouts, and they're filled with a smoked trout broth.
Hmm.
And so we kind of dehydrate smoked trout, make a powder, and make broths with that powder.
Hmm.
So,
well, you guys are both cooking, you have restaurants in St. Louis from the same region. Did any of your ingredients like sort of pay homage to what you do back at homes in your respective restaurants?
Yeah, I think everything that we were cooking on, you know, on the niche side was all focused kind of on our region and around our region, which I think we're still exploring, and we're really still trying to find out what St. Louis is and what that area is. And I was talking to you before about the wine country in St. Louis and just what an amazing place it is. I mean, it's beautiful. I don't think anybody would expect it to be so beautiful. I'm from Washington, D.C., so I kind of moved there in a crazy way. But when I first went to wine country, and when I first went to the countryside of Missouri, 45 minutes out of St. Louis, I was blown away. I mean, speechless.
Yeah, I didn't even know that there was wine country in Missouri. Yeah. Nonetheless, would I expect it to be beautiful?
Yeah, rolling green hills, and it's. I mean, you might as well be in Umbria or Tuscany. It's
That's
really
bananas.
Breathtaking. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Who would expect there to be that terroir in St. Louis?
And so, a guy from a Bethlehem Valley winery took me out there one day. He raises cattle on one side of the hills and grows grapes on the other side. And he took me out to his place. And it's really when I decided that I was going to stay in St. Louis. And, you know, all that time, I'd been there for about 5 years at that point already. And I hadn't really experienced that wine country. And it sold me. I was like, I'm never leaving St. Louis. This is amazing. And so much potential and so much to look forward to. So,
What grapes are grown there?
So I couldn't even begin to tell you all of them. Norton is one of the primary red grapes, and Chardonnay is kind of the primary white. And then there's a lot of kind of little known grapes. So Treminette's kind of like a semi-sweet.
Are any of those indigenous to the area?
Yeah, I think they're all pretty much indigenous to the area. And I think the thing is, for years, people were trying to make them into something they weren't.
Yeah.
You know, make them taste like Pinot Noir or make them taste like Cabernet or something. But when people started, and there's a few people doing it right now, so it's why I say potential, who said, let's make these taste like Norton. You know, let's make the, you know, just like Italy with all the small varietals and in different regions, let's make this taste like what it's supposed to be. It's never going to be some giant, you know, Cabernet, but it's going to be a really good Norton.
Yeah.
And really interesting. So
that's such a good point. And, you know, we were kind of just talking about this before the show started about what it means to like be from the Midwest. And I think that, you know, there's a feeling of celebration that's happening now, but I think there's also been like a lot of insecurity attached to it, like, you know, not wanting to be like boasting that your wine is from St. Louis because maybe no one would take you seriously.
Yeah.
In the same way that I think chefs had that same sort of experience, but there's something happening.
Absolutely.
Over there that,
yeah,
you know, now, you know, there's such a celebration of like local ingredients and diversity that's happening. And I know that you've described the ingredients from your area as humble.
Absolutely.
Before, and what does that mean, and what does it mean to be humble, and how are the ingredients different in St. Louis versus, you know, in New York? How is it distinct?
So this isn't a great selling point, but I use it as an example all the time. St. Louis has harsh climates.
Mm-hmm.
In the Midwest, a lot of regions out there have really harsh climates. You know, so you have bitter colds and really hot, humid hots. And I think that lifestyle, and, you know, makes for, number one, humble ingredients, because you can't grow all these little precious things all the time like you can in California. But the same thing for the people, too. I mean, you know, people in Missouri have thick skin. you know, and I think it makes for a very humble community. So people that are very humble, and the ingredients that grow there are, you know, are humble. So what we've done is tried to kind of embrace that and embrace those humble ingredients. You know, I think one of our entrees is carrots, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, an homage to that. And like I was just telling you, Brussels sprouts before that, it's nothing fancy, it's nothing crazy, but we try to make something really elevated out of those humble things. And I think that's the thing, is that when people stop trying to be somebody else, they really find out who they are, and they find out, you know, what their region is, what their wine is, what their food is. You know, once you stop trying to, like, copy everything in, you know, New York, or try and be something that you're not, then I think you really get to the heart of it. And I think we're just starting to get to the heart of it in Missouri. So yeah. It's cool.
That is cool. And how does it work, like, with technique and how you apply that to the ingredients? Because I know you're very focused on, like, simplicity and having very ingredient-driven menu items. So, I mean, your restaurant niche is pretty high-end.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said before, it was, you know, elevated haute cuisine, or even put it on the map, I don't know, in St. Louis. So if you're doing such, like, simple ingredients, how do you apply that to just such, you know, stripped down menus?
Yeah. And I think simple is, you know, such a misleading word in so many ways. You know, the ingredients are simple in theory, and we try to keep the flavors focused. So if it's carrot, we want you to taste, you know, 5 or 6 different levels of carrot and textures of carrot. And, you know, so again, it's deceptive. You know, that Brussels sprout dish looks very simple, but I mean, it takes months to really get to where we can put out a dish. I mean, you know, once we get it going. So I mean, our techniques are definitely not simple at all. And but we try to make, you know, we don't want 50 different ingredients and different flavors on one plate. We want you to really kind of experience that, you know, that flavor,
carrot,
or, you know, a couple little flavors on that plate, to really give you an idea of who we are. And I think that's, again, it's how we get our message across a lot better.
Yeah. So I just want to back up for a second and kind of, like, figure out how this all started for you. Because this is the first time we've met, but I know that you opened Niche in 2005 when you were 25 years old, which is...
Bad idea.
I mean, it sounds like it was a good idea, because it's worked out really well, but I mean, it just kind of blows my mind. Like, who even knows who they are at 25? You opened a restaurant, and you're not from St. Louis, you're from D.C., and then I also read that you had been a snowboard photographer before becoming a chef. So, I mean, it almost sounds like you had some sort of crazy midlife crisis, except you were 25. So that's not what happened.
Might be midlife. You never know.
Come on. No, you're just, you know, eating all those carrots. You're good. Yeah. So what happened? What was going on? You were a snowboard photographer, and then...
Yeah, and I really wasn't interested in food, to be honest. So, I mean, long story short, I didn't do very well as a youth. You know, I found my way into way too much trouble, and somehow ended up in northern Idaho, and at a school for kids who aren't, you know, doing so well with their life. And it was kind of a weird experience. Not an experience I really enjoyed, but an experience that put me in a different environment, and you know, kind of in the wilderness a lot, and on a farm. It was a working farm, and, you know, so I learned a whole different lifestyle, and it changed my perspective, it changed my work ethic, it changed everything. I mean, you know, I came from a city kid to, you know, chopping logs and cutting down trees and you know, hauling big rocks around and, you know, building houses for pigs and stuff like that. So, you know, that I think that was step one. But while I was there, I did a work-study program with a photographer, and I had always done photography growing up. And he was an action photographer, and I was a snowboarder and really into it. And so, you know, one thing led to another. I was working with a lot of snowboarders and, you know, doing wakeboarding photography. And so when I left that school, I went to Salt Lake City, Utah for college. And, once again, college wasn't working out so well for me. But I was shooting pictures, everything like that, not making a very good living. And so I got a job when I dropped out washing cars in the morning. And then that wasn't very good, or it wasn't good enough. So at nighttime, I was always also washing dishes, and so in a pool hall. And they let me cook. So it was kind of like washing dishes and cooking, you know, pool hall food. But what I fell in love with, I fell in love with this like camaraderie in the kitchen, and it was maybe the first time I felt like I actually belonged anywhere in my entire life, and so that mixed with the concept of instant gratification, probably why a lot of kids get in trouble in the first place. But it was like start to finish. You know, you come in, you prep, you put out dishes, you make people happy. And then you're done, and you feel great at the end of the night, and so that was it for me. I mean, after that, you know, it pretty much sealed the deal. So cooking.
So how did you decide to open a restaurant at 25? I mean, that's a really big move that most people spend years and years and years working towards.
Yeah.
And I also read that you hadn't been to the area in St. Louis before when you chose the location, and had you even seen the building before you bought it?
So. Go back just a little. In Salt Lake, I worked for a guy named Brian Moscatello after that pool hall. I decided I really wanted to give it a shot. Worked with Brian Moscatello, who, you know, was probably way ahead of his time and one of the most brutal chefs I had ever worked for. And I sucked. I thought I was great. I sucked. And he really drove a lot of things into me. And he's in Chicago now at Storefront. And he's an amazing chef. And even though back then I probably hated him, you know, I have so much respect for what he taught me. So from there, I did a lot of stages around, went to Europe for a little bit. And I mean, nothing major. And came back and worked for the Chateau Marmont as a sous chef out there. And liked L.A., but... didn't see myself like, you know, again, I don't feel like I fit in that kind of scene, that, you know, actor model scene. It just wasn't for me. I kind of wanted to work 18 hours a day and that's it. So I moved back to Salt Lake City. I know, get weird.
Sorry,
I know,
what? Crazy. And that's it. Just 18 hours a day.
Yeah. And so I moved back to Salt Lake City, and got a job cooking with a guy named Perry Hendricks. Was in Chicago also now, and it was a great experience. But I knew I really just wanted to kind of do something on my own, and I'm really into real estate and architecture and all these little like kind of side things that I wish I was, you know, good enough in school to have become an architect. But so I found all this architecture in St. Louis, and it just kind of spoke to me, kind of in the same way like Brooklyn might, or like Washington D.C. might when I was growing up. And maybe it was a fear of coming back home. Like, most of my family's from New York, and I kind of didn't want to come to New York for my first restaurant, which was probably a great idea.
Probably.
Because I probably wasn't ready to open my own restaurant at 25. And you ask how I knew who I was I as a chef. I mean, I really didn't. So I'm really lucky that they embraced me the way they did. But I think I found myself in St. Louis as a chef. That's where I really, and I honestly think it maybe happened like within the past 2 years, where I really kind of started to solidify my vision as a chef and, you know, what my food is. And I finally kind of feel comfortable with the food that I'm putting out and feel like it really, you know, comes from me and not, you know, an interpretation of an old dish or something like that. So.
Cool. Well, that's an amazing story, Chef.
Thank you.
We should take a quick break and check in with our sponsors, but we'll be right back. Keep it locked.
And this one's called The Code by Tom Cruise on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
we'd like to send a special thank you to our newest business member, Paradise Locker Meats, a family-run supplier of beef, pork, lamb, smoked sausages, and game meat in Trimble, Missouri. All meat cutting and processing is done on-site in their USDA-inspected plant. The Fantasma family have gained a notable reputation for providing quality meat products. They have a wide range of dedicated customers, in addition to celebrity and notable chefs throughout the U.S., receiving their product each week through Heritage Foods USA. Paradise Locker Meats and the Fantasma family look forward to serving you. For more information, visit www.paradiselockermeats.com.
This is Mario.
And this is Teresa Fantasma with Paradise Locker Meats.
And you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Sure are. You are listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. For those of you just tuning in, I'm in the studio with Chef Gerard Kraft from St. Louis. He is the executive chef of Niche, as well as a couple other restaurants we're going to be talking about. Chef, you just told us your amazing story of how you came to be a chef and a James Beard finalist, from troubled youth to award-winning chef. It's very, very compelling. So I want to hear a little bit about now, present day.
Sure.
I want to hear about Niche. It's just, you know, obviously very, very acclaimed, very well-regarded restaurant, doing some really interesting fine dining and local-driven food. And then you have a new restaurant as well. Is that right?
Yep. Pastaria.
Okay.
All right. So Pastaria first. I mean, so skip forward. I have two amazing children and a wife back in St. Louis. And so we struggled all the time to find good food for our family where we could go out and you know, not go to a nice restaurant and embarrass all our friends with you know, my great kids throwing their food around or, you know, whatever it is, or being loud or whatever, you know, and you want your kids to be able to be a little loud. And so we opened Pastaria, which is it's kind of our answer to a lot of the crappy casual restaurants out there, you know, and they do it so badly. And so it's affordable, you know, the great portion sizes, and we extrude all of the pasta right there in front of everybody. So the rolled pasta and the extruded pasta happens right in the window, you know, so that, you know, families, kids, whoever can come up. We wanted it to be kind of a town hall kind of experience. And so we get kind of the all walks of life in there. You know, you get everybody from, you know, at like 5 o'clock, it fills up with families. And then, you know, 7 o'clock, you know, people are in suits and stuff like that. And then a little later, it's, you know, kind of the hip crowd, you know.
Yeah,
and
you like, turn the lights down a little bit,
exactly,
turn up the music.
Yeah, around like, you know, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have great pizzas, great pasta. You know, we're using flours all out of the Midwest and you know, trying to use great ingredients and just cook good, simple Italian food and have fun with it. You know, I think, you know, all this Niche stuff and, you know, all this, you know, fancy food and stuff that you know, there's a lot of pressure to you know, be the best. This is just good food.
Yeah.
And it makes people really happy, and so it's kind of my saving grace. It's really fun.
Okay. Yeah. So tell us about Niche.
So
no, go ahead.
Yeah, so Niche, again, it's been a work in progress. It's you know, seen a lot of different styles of food.
Where did it start? What did it start as, and what is it now?
So it started as a what I called an American bistro, and that was about 8 years ago. And I mean, we were serving, you know, good pork products. So like braised pork shank with polenta and chanterelles, and you know, good hearty food. Maybe some, you know, twists in the flavors, but. And then it's kind of evolved into, I think, more thought-provoking food that it is today. And it's, you know, it's a prefix or tasting only. Now we've really slimmed the menu down, and I think right now we get to start to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that 8 years has really led to us really learning a lot and talking a lot about what St. Louis is. And I was telling you earlier about this regional thing and like, calling something the Midwest, and I started to do the study. I was like, well, you know, my buddies in Memphis are 4 hours away, and, you know, all these guys that I never see in Minneapolis who I'm, you know, starting to get to know are like 11 hours away. Like, how are they the South, and how is that the Midwest? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, I have way more to do with that part of the region than that. So I, you know, what we're doing now is kind of trying to break down barriers and kind of understand where we are and where St. Louis is, not just Midwest. You know, it's it's St. Louis,
you know? Right? Yeah. So it's like a hyper localized.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And the story you're trying to tell is, it sounds like it's a story about the ingredients, and it sounds like it's a story about your location and where you are and the farmers that
exactly.
are you're working with. And I know that you've cultivated like really, really personal relationships with farmers. Like, you go above and beyond, like, oh, locally sourced, you know, I make sure, like, you actually invested in a farm because they were raising a certain kind of heritage breed pig that you wanted to use for the restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, farmers come to us with ideas. A lot of times we really want to do this. And so we'll kind of make an investment in that farm so that we can, you know, get the product we want and start to see it kind of realized. And there is, I mean, there's amazing farmers all through that area. And this year, actually, we're going to do a lot of traveling, in the outskirt areas that we haven't done before to meet new farmers and to even kind of grow that network and build upon it.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about Niche is that it tells a story of many stories. It's like the nexus of many different local stories that are sort of all culminating in what is your menu. And it's so encouraging and nice to hear about how much you've given back to the area. And, you know, you're not a Midwesterner, you're a transplant, and how seriously you've taken that, like what it's meant to you to be someone who's chosen this location, chosen to integrate yourself and become such a staple of the community in so many ways, such a, like a holistic, cyclical way that you have.
And so, I'm not a bragging person at all, but I heard this quote last night that said, you know, somebody said, why is this in St. Louis?
Right.
Why is this food in St. Louis?
Yeah.
I said, you know, why not?
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome that St. Louis, you know, that we have so many chefs right now in St. Louis that are really pushing to make it a destination, you know, and our hope is that people soon start to see that they can come up from New Orleans, they can come down from Chicago, you know, from Kansas City, wherever, to this amazing region. I mean, you know, so whether you're going out to wine country, I mean, what a great, inexpensive vacation to one of the more beautiful spots in the country that you don't even know, you know. Exactly.
Yeah.
Honeymoons, whatever. I mean, there's so much to do there, and I just think that people here, it's again, you know, people hear St. Louis and they're like, oh, really?
Right.
You know, but it's more than that. And so, and I think it's one of those things, you have to see it to believe it. So we're trying to figure out ways to tell people about it, but
yeah, it's one of those things that we were talking about. I mean, not just trying to pretend you're something else or something that you're not, but like so above and beyond, just owning it, just like shouting it from the rooftops.
Yeah. And it wouldn't work anywhere else either. You know, if I was in LA cooking this food, it wouldn't make any sense.
That's right.
You know, you'd be cooking seafood because you're right by the ocean.
But yeah.
But it makes sense right where we are.
Yeah. So you told us a little bit about what's going on with your wine program, which is so exciting to hear. You know, completely new information to me that there's Missouri wines happening.
Yeah.
I mean, big time. And then you guys are also doing a cocktail program that's being rolled out at all of your restaurants?
All of the restaurants.
Okay. It's a barrel-aged cocktail program or just...
So barrel-aged cocktails are a part of it. I think one of the most popular ones that was just written about in a review was the Beat's Knees. And so it's kind of a beet-infused gin.
That's a play on bee's knees.
Exactly. And it's this bright... Yeah. You're good with your classic cocktails.
Yeah.
And so, you know, bright yellow. And, you know, it's got a lot of sweetness from that beets, you know. So instead of as much honey. And really nice. But again, starting to focus in each restaurant on what they're doing. So Niche is... Again, you know, more vegetable and herb driven. So the cocktails should obviously reflect that and kind of speak the same story as the rest of the food. So
are they not only created with the ingredients in mind to sort of reflect the ingredients in the food, but they're also developed in mind that they would be paired really well with the food.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so some of them are paired. I mean, obviously, you know, I personally enjoy cocktails, you know, before my meal.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least a few. and then wine with the meal. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they, our mixologist sat down with our chefs and said, you know, what's going to taste really good with this dish. And I think, you know, it's a great synergy.
And what about this barrel-aged Negroni? That sounds really delicious.
The barrel-aged Negroni, I mean, I'm not an expert on making it, but I'm an expert on drinking it.
Good.
It is really good. It's made with Lillet and Aperol, and I mean, the flavors are just really, it's actually a little more mellow,
mm-hmm.
and maybe not as sweet as a straight Negroni, and it, I mean, to me, it's perfect.
Yeah, that sounds really, really good. Are you doing Campari in it? No, Aperol.
Aperol, yeah.
Okay, cool. And you guys are also working on expanding your non-alcoholic cocktails.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And I'm guessing, like, maybe at Pastoria, that might be a really nice thing for people with, like, young children or something like that to come in.
Yeah, so so we have a new beverage director, Michael, and he's really going through everything and rethinking it. You know, everything from water to soda to... Mm-hmm. tea to, you know, it's the whole picture, really, when you start talking about beverage. And I think low alcohol is really important because whether it's low alcohol or non-alcoholic, I mean, a lot of people aren't drinking. And honestly, a lot of people with the low alcohol, like, you go to a cocktail bar and you have two drinks and you can be hammered by the end, you know, and you don't, it's not enjoyable necessarily.
Right. Yeah. You want to remember the food you're eating.
Exactly. You want to make it last through the evening. You don't want to walk out of a restaurant or whatever, throwing up or stumbling. That's not
a good look.
It's not sexy.
Nope.
No,
not sexy.
So it's, you know, I think it's a really important program and it's one that I really personally enjoy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I just love how much thought you've put into all of your restaurants and how, you know, nobody is excluded. Everyone can eat amazing food in the area and you just got a little something for everyone, which is really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Unfortunately, we have to wrap up, but thank you, Chef. It's been such a pleasure to have you in the studio today and all the best luck tomorrow or Monday rather
at the James Beard Awards.
We're all keeping our fingers crossed for you at Heritage Radio and everyone out there who's listening is sending you positive vibes.
I need it.
Certainly well-deserved.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. You can listen to all of our programs online at iTunes or our website as podcasts. And once again, we encourage you to help support us. Check us out online, heritageradionetwork.org. Click donate. Thank you for listening. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.